Become our friend on Facebook. Post on our wall your thoughts about our shows and network. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaBusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Where do you stand as a leader? Are there things you would change about your business or organization? Welcome to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with your host, Rick Thiemann. Together, we'll explore the five dynamics that exist in every workplace, as well as answer some of your leadership questions. Now, here's your host, Rick Thiemann.
Hello and welcome to the show. It's 12 o'clock Central Time, and welcome to the show for those on the East Coast. This afternoon, and for those on the West Coast, good morning. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, with the Executive Group. The firm was founded 20 years ago. You can find us on the web at www.theeg.com. And if you're calling in and got questions today, you can call us at 866-472-5790. Today's show is a continuation of last week's show with my guest and cohort, Dr. Gordon Medlock, and we're going to be talking about coaching again as a continuation. Last week we spent time talking about coaching just from a perspective of what goes into effective coaching and what should you look for if you use an outside firm versus an inside firm. But today's coaching is going to be more about corporate culture and developing a coaching coaching mentoring program within your organization. And Gordon and I will be talking about some of those component pieces. But one of the things that we did a few shows ago, we had two shows we did on leadership. And in that leadership model, we discussed the process or having an effective process around building an effective leadership program. And last week we spoke about what goes into building an effective process around coaching and establishing a strong coaching program. We're going to kind of play off of both of those shows in this week's discussion with Gordon and I. But one of the things that we talked about in the leadership process or having an effective leadership program was that in order for an organization to have a strong leadership program, they needed to have a sound business strategy, whether that's a go-to-market strategy like a Walmart or whether your go-to-market strategy is more like Nordstrom's where it's highly customer service, or it's more like Apple, where you're highly innovative and competitive in your products. Whatever your go-to-business strategy is, has to be backed up by the competencies you're looking for your leaders to emulate. Hence, ties in with some of the coaching pieces we're going to talk about. It also talks about having a sound assessment process to assess the capabilities of your leaders. As well, we talked about an assessment process to identify where the gaps are in the coaching process. But also what needs to happen is in that leadership program a sound and direct feedback loop, which is no different than what coaching requires. And sometimes managers have a trouble delivering that coaching piece. Next is the accountability process that goes into a strong leadership program, but also goes into a strong coaching program. And then the ongoing support and development. So there's a lot that mirrors a strong leadership program with a strong coaching program. And Gordon and myself work very closely together in that component piece. So, Gordon, you want to just maybe expound on the connection between those two?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Rick. And absolutely. What we're looking at, when we're looking at coaching, of course, we're looking at a wide spectrum of issues. It could be a problem with an individual contributor. It could be a problem with a manager. There could be just a development perspective you're trying to develop. But the idea is, rather than looking at these as sort of one-off assignments that you're trying to fix this or that issue, the question is, do you have a culture that really supports the development of your people? And that's really what we're talking about today. So talking about that leadership program components, I think, is important because that really lays the foundation for your orientation toward leadership development throughout your organization, which really sets the tone for your coaching program. I think one of the issues you mentioned there that I know I look at a lot is this notion of sound feedback. I think the ability of managers to give accurate feedback to their direct reports and to their colleagues about what's working and what's not is always a difficult challenge. You know, people are uncomfortable with that. They are afraid to make people, you know, to challenge them in some ways or make them feel perhaps lose faith if they're being addressed on an issue that that they haven't really met expectations. And knowing how to create those kind of difficult conversations and to do it in a constructive way is a very important part of the manager's skill set and something that I think is important in creating a culture that supports coaching. And so if your managers are not skilled in that, it's really important to be able to give them that tool or develop that tool. And that's part of what we look at as an organization, is how to help your managers be more effective at having those kind of conversations. Because let's face it, if you don't have good feedback, you don't have the information you need to make the changes you need. And without that, you're kind of flying blind. Rick, I know you've done quite a bit of work in helping individuals sort of develop that capacity. Could you speak a little bit to some of the maybe a situation that our listeners might be able to relate to around how this kind of feedback process really helps to enhance the effectiveness of the organization?
Well, I think that's a key thing. And before I touch on that, and let me make sure I don't forget about it, but I do want to address that. But I guess in terms of just helping people put a framework around what Gordon and I are trying to speak to in terms of a coaching culture, yes, it certainly is the feedback. And I've got a classic example that Gordon wants me to talk about, and I will. But I think what I want to do first is frame a couple of ideas or comments that would support them. So what does a coaching culture look like? And there's several components. Number one, it's a culture that supports people. In some organizations I've seen, that's not necessarily the case. People get more degraded, if you will. I think a second thing that goes into a strong coaching culture is you've got to recognize that people are going to fail, and you need to allow them to fail and recognize how to help them pick themselves back up. Also, you need to encourage people to take chances, because some people are not good at taking risks. And so business is all about risk, and it's getting people to recognize that it's okay to take chances. It's just we need to make sure they're well thought out. We also need to give people the tools to learn. I don't think organizations provide some of the training necessary or coaching piece. We need to hold people accountable for their own development. We need to make sure they're involved in the process. And then we need to teach managers how to coach. And I think that once you build those component pieces into, and you need to teach managers how to provide feedback, which is what Gordon's request was for me. But I think that we need to frame out what a coaching culture looks like. And if we have those elements involved in that corporate culture, we're more apt to get managers to recognize the difference between managing and coaching, the difference between pushing and pulling, the difference between being directive and non-directive in their approach to managing versus coaching, which we want to get into as this show evolves. But what we're trying to help organizations see is that in addition to having a strong leadership process and a strong leadership program, that feeds your succession planning, and succession planning and a leadership pipeline are not one and the same. But I think understanding that the coaching culture needs to exist is important. So having those 7 or 8 bullet points I just spoke to are critical to the success of having a great organization where you do look at coaching as a philosophy and a set of principles and practices, and then you teach that and you reinforce that. And then also then comes feedback around training and things of that nature. So in terms of that component piece, and I didn't mean to dodge your question, Gordon, but I think it was important to talk about setting the stage, if you will, for what a coaching culture looks like.
Well, and I think you raise an important point, Rick, because what you're talking about here is a real challenge, because there's quite a bit of research that indicates that one of the things that managers are least good at is coaching and developing their people. They're used to focusing on results and getting the results they need, and they're good and typically strong in those areas. But when it comes to looking at a skill gap or a development need or an assessment of a person's strengths and weaknesses to understand what's required, or even sometimes looking at their own part and why an employee may not be developing properly, these are skills that most managers have difficulty themselves with. So As human nature, if it's not our strength, we're less likely to do it. So the sort of default place in most organizations is to put relatively less energy into the coaching piece and more energy simply into the management piece. I wonder if you could speak to what are some of the things that help, you know, shift that for managers and some of the ways that you found that have been effective in helping managers get better at this important skill.
Well, I think that one of the books I read a while back called The Leadership Pipeline really speaks a lot to understanding a manager and where they're at. And I think first managers have to understand where they're at and what their roles are. And one of the things that I've seen, and Gordon, you know, I've talked about this, but one of the things that I've seen is that most organizations have one standard set of competencies, and then that's a kind of one size fits all. But there must be competencies at different levels. And in the leadership pipeline, Sharon talks about the levels of leadership or the evolution, where your first level is you're managing yourself. The second level is you're managing others. The third level is now you're managing managers. Then you move to being a functional manager. You move to becoming a business manager, then a group manager, then an enterprise manager, which may even include an international assignment. And each of those levels requires a new set of principles, guidelines, values, thought processes, competencies. And I think it's about where, and of course, feedback is one of the competencies no matter what level you're at, which is critical. But I think understanding that the companies need to establish that leadership pipeline to gain their key competitive advantage, and they can grow their own leaders at all levels with a defined coaching program that recognizing where that executive is at that level and then help them coach to the level or understand that level.
Great point. And I think that your question or your issue that you're bringing up in terms of the competency model that supports that, I think this is where HR, talent management, and consulting help can really help put the infrastructure together to give that some focus for individuals. So, you know, if you're looking at your competency model around what management looks like, it's going to be different for a supervisor who has more hands-on relationship with the direct reports and closer connection to the actual work that needs to be done, as opposed to when you're at another level of management where you're managing managers, where you're really looking at coordinating efforts and developing processes and a little bit less connected to the immediate and direct work being done. Those are really different competencies, as you say, different mindsets, different thinking processes, different challenges. So your competency model, if it's going to be really well designed, should reflect those differences, because remember, the important thing about a competency model is that it supports and defines what's superior performance for that particular position or level of job. So a lot of organizations stop short of actually defining the behavioral indicators that precisely, because they say that looks like a lot of work. We just want basically a simpler method that gives us an easy way to formulate this. And I can appreciate that. It is a difficult and challenging process. But the point here is that if you do the homework behind the scenes, then it becomes easier for managers to coach because they have clear criteria for how they're coaching people at the appropriate level.
So we're going to get ready for our first break in the show. We're talking about building a corporate culture and understanding the components that go into that. And so you're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? And my guest, Gordon Medlock, and my name's Rick Thiemann, and we'll join you after the break.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.TheEG.com.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. Do you have a question or comment about today's program? Please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back to the show where we're talking about developing a coaching culture and a stronger coaching mindset for the organization to build upon rather than just teaching managers how to give people orders. But we're just before the break, we were talking about the aspect of Sharon's work in the leadership pipeline and the different levels. And I guess one way to kind of build an example around that is that, you know, there's ways you can identify if at different stages. In other words, for a manager who is managing managers, you'd look for things like inability to delegate, or poor performance management ability, or the inability to build a strong team, or perhaps even someone who has more of a single-minded focus on getting things done, or choosing clones over contributors. In other words, I'm looking for people like myself. You know, there are signs that emerge when leaders are out of sync with their role and expectation and what kind of coaching is provided. But also gets back to what Gordon and I were talking about in the first part of the show, and even when we talked about in our leadership segment, or last week's coaching session, I should say, and that is understanding the competencies necessary at the given level. So by comparison then, if we have a manager who's more of a business manager or a functional manager, we would look for things like they still get stuck in operational thinking and tend to do things more from an operational standpoint and less from a strategic standpoint. But the other piece that comes into play as people move up that leadership pipeline into higher levels of responsibility becomes extreme complexity. And the complexity of an international role or the complexity of a role that really manages the pure enterprise of the organization, and whether that's a $50 million enterprise or a $50 billion enterprise, which there are companies that size, those are the complexity of those things becomes huge. So the coaching piece then that Gordon spoke to becomes critical around the competency side and understanding the depth of competency. So, Gordon, I know you've worked with competency models. Explore that piece.
Sure. Well, I think you're talking about that progression from a sort of supervisory level to a management level to a functional level. And there really are different skills that are required and different competencies that are required at each of those. And I think you've touched on that pretty well. I think the issue here is you've got the competency model in place. The manager has been assessed and has assessed their people on those competencies. And the question is then they need to sit down and have that conversation with the person to say, you know, we're really seeing a gap here. We're looking at a performance issue that's keeping you from really accomplishing what you want to accomplish. And there looks like, you know, there's a mismatch here in terms of your competencies related to the particular level of management that you're being expected to do. So it's having someone then who can then guide them in that process and take them to the next level, help them see the possibilities, be able to identify how they can leverage their strengths, identify those strengths, and also notice how they may have relied on a previous strength too much, and it's kept them from being more effective. I know in one of your previous shows, you spoke about derailers and the problem that people have often in terms of overusing a strength that was effective at one level and then actually ends up limiting them at a higher level. So, and we see that a lot with the management pipeline. So those kinds of considerations and having your managers be attuned to how to pick up those behaviors, see them in the moment, and give that sort of immediate feedback rather than waiting for a competency assessment twice a year or a performance review at the end of the year. This is a process that needs to be living and ongoing day to day as you're working with your people. And it's not micromanagement. I want to make that distinction. You're not micromanaging. What you're doing is noticing, recognizing where the gaps are that can lead to performance issues, and then providing that available feedback and coaching to the person so that they can catch what they're doing, catch it early, make the adjustments, and feel they have the support of their manager or coach to help them through that process. And it's putting all those pieces in place that really give the competency model its heart, if you will, and its actual accountability so that it can actually be used as a process for getting the results we want.
Well, and this speaks to the fact of, based on the level of the executive and the set of dynamics, the question is, do you use an internal coach or an external coach? And does the coach you've chosen have the level of capacity to deal with that executive at that level? Because there's different levels of coaches. There's different levels of experience of coaches. There's different backgrounds of coaches that lend credence. And one of the most prolific examples I have is in one of my clients, the president of this very large division wanted the HR manager to coach one of the functional managers that was struggling. And this has been ongoing for a year and has not gotten any traction because the functional manager doesn't respect the HR manager. The HR manager has blatantly made comments of discern, if you will, about this individual's capacity and capability. This individual has not taken on ownership in her 360 or the things that she's taken on. And the organization has left it up to the HR manager to be the internal coach. And it's not gone anywhere in a year's time. And while the HR manager has approached this individual on opportunities to sit down for coaching, the individual has not taken this individual up on their offer to be coached. So it's a vicious circle, but the fact is that this is a classic situation that needs an external coach, and an internal coach isn't going to work.
Well, that's an excellent point, and absolutely right. Coaching only works to the extent, unless you're just using a carrot and stick mentality and using the leverage of your role to enforce things. If you really want effective coaching, it needs to include the chemistry of the individuals and also the ability of the potential coach to be aware of their issues and how they may be affecting their relationship with that particular individual. It sounds like your HR director that you were referring to may not have been as self-aware about the limitations of their capacity, and of course, if they're not being clear about their own limits and their own strengths and development needs, they're not going to be able to be effective in helping others do that as well. So, again, we're back to the challenge of how do you get the right skill sets in place with the right people to be able to coach. Because the truth is, if you don't have the same behaviors and the same attitudes, if you haven't done your own homework, if you will, as a coach, you're not going to be effective in coaching others. So it's sort of a chicken and egg issue. If you're going to create the culture of good coaches, you need good coaches to make that happen, people with that capacity. And so it comes down to the selection process of making sure you've got the right people in place. And if you don't, that you bring in the people that can really help you build that culture and develop those skills so that you've got the people that can deliver this.
Well, and as you move up into higher levels in the organization, again, you know, this is within the confines of this particular situation. I can give you another coaching situation where I was brought in to evaluate in an intervention and given a coaching assignment that we evaluated an individual who was managing the entire South American operation, which was 60% of this $2 billion company's operations. And in being brought in the assessment work, it was discovered that this individual just didn't have the makeup necessary to be that business unit leader that they were asking her to be, and it was went way over her head. And that coaching assignment really resulted in more of a recommendation that, you know, it wouldn't go anywhere. But by the same token, one of the coaching situations I was brought in was with a senior executive of president of $600 million division of a billion-dollar company in the automotive sector with an Asian ownership, and was brought in on the executive coaching piece there and did 360s in Japan and interviewed his peers and interviewed the ownership of the organization and made six different recommendations for helping this executive move themselves along, to which the coaching never took place because he never took ownership. So it's one thing to get a coach that will coach. It's another thing to get with the individual. Will they take ownership in it? And there's two classic examples. Unfortunately, I have more positive examples than negative examples. But the fact of the matter is you have different coaching situations and different dynamics with different people. And that coaching process, whether the organization recognizes that it's an internal coach or an external coach, and what's the best suitor, if you will, to support that, becomes a critical piece for the successful outcome. And there's two classic examples where neither took place because ownership didn't make them accountable for their own growth. And one of the things I pointed out in having a strong leadership culture is having some type of accountability process and hold people accountable for their own development. And so if that doesn't take place, then it's hard for any coach, be external or external, to be successful in that situation.
Well, and I think, Rick, you raise a point which we might be able to get into in a little more detail after the next break, but I'll speak to it briefly here, is the notion of coaches for CEOs at the very top level of the organization. That's the level at which the culture is defined and created, and so the capacity of the leader of the organization to be absolutely clear about their own strengths and weaknesses, ability to empower and enable their own direct reports to work effectively as a team, to develop their capacities fully as leaders and to really create a strong culture at the very top is probably the most important intervention that you can do. So having a CEO that's open to that kind of self-analysis and willingness to look at themselves, I know an organization that we worked with, a publishing company in New York, we had the benefit of working with an organization, with a CEO who was in fact very open to that and noticed that his whole organization, his team needed to shift from a set of independent publishing units to an integrated team that where people were supporting each other, a major shift in the paradigm of the way the organization was working. And he was open to the coaching and support to make sure that that team could be built. And as we speak, in the process of restructuring and redeveloping those people to function as strong team members and not simply as strong business leaders of independent businesses.
Well, and the greatest example currently working for me right now is I'm working with the CEO of a company up in Chicago, just a great guy, and he has taken full ownership in not only his own personal coaching with me, but also he's taken full ownership in coaching his direct frontline managers, which I don't typically see a lot of, unfortunately, but nonetheless, he's taken full ownership and not only holding them accountable, but holding himself accountable to understand more about how to build a stronger coaching process because he wants that to be a culture.
Boy, that
I have
is
other
great.
Organizations where I've seen the president say, well, you know what? I want people to be able to do their 360s and do their leadership work and meet with you, and then they can decide what they want to do with their, with the information that they received. It never goes anywhere. So we're going to jump into our next break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more in depth around the coaching piece and understanding some of the feedback loop that we get into and the accountability loop that we get into as we move this process along. So you listen to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. We'll see you back after the break.
From the boardroom to you. Voice America Business Network.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
No family can survive on two incomes anymore, let alone one. If you are supplementing your family's income working from home, then tune into The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio. Host Deb Bixler brings you sales tips, lead generation systems, and best business practices that guarantee direct sales success. Whether you're looking for a little extra cash or a career change, The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio will give you proven systems that will work in your home business. The Cash Flow Show. Every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. Do you have a question or comment about today's program? Please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. My guest and cohort, Dr. Gordon Medlock, and I are talking about coaching and coaching culture. And just before the break, we were talking about leadership and coaching leadership coaching from the top and the significance behind that. And too often I've seen leadership abdicate to HR the responsibility for coaching in the organization. And many times I've seen where training programs have been conducted where leadership wants a training program conducted on coaching, but guess what? The leadership's not present. But the people that they want them to implement it are present. But and I use the example of an executive I work with right now who's taken complete ownership in driving this through his organization. But we spoke at the beginning of the show about what goes into a corporate culture and of coaching, and that is, and I'll highlight those again, is create a culture that supports people, it allows people to fail, it encourages people to take chances, it gives people the tools to learn, it holds them accountable for their own development. It involves people in the process, and it teaches managers how to coach. And that has to start at the top, and it has to be emulated by the top. And, Gordon, absolutely. You and I were talking about that at the break, and the significance around if an organization wants traction behind coaching as a culture, guess where it has to start and what has to be mirrored?
Yeah, I'd like to speak to that, Rick, because I think it's such an important issue. And I think there's a mindset often among leaders that the idea is we want to bring coaching in to fix people, you know, that they're – somehow there's someone, one of my direct reports or one somebody down the line is a problem, and how do we get that problem taken care of, and let's bring in a coach or get somebody able to coach this person to develop them, as opposed to seeing the issue being, how do I as a leader in the organization, what is it that I do to contribute to creating that culture that allows that person to be a poor performer, and what are the issues that I need to do in myself to make sure that that's not part of the culture? It could be, for example, Perhaps there's an accountability gap, and maybe my management style is or leadership style is too hands-off, and then sure enough, there are accountability issues that are not being addressed. And by having me as a CEO or the leader of the organization to be able to really address my issues that are affecting the culture, you'd be amazed at how some of those other problems just clear out very quickly, because suddenly the game has changed, the accountability is different, and the direction is different, and things start happening. So I think your point around engaging people at the highest level, that we're not just bringing in a training program to fix people, but we're really bringing in a new mindset for leadership in the organization, is a hugely important part of this coaching culture that you're speaking of.
Well, and in the very first show that we did, episode number one, we spent that hour talking about a culture, just what kind of culture do you want and how significant is culture. And what style and demeanor of culture do you want your organization to emulate? And, of course, coaching is one of those component pieces that we're talking about today, in the same way that leadership is an essential piece of developing your leadership pipeline and developing your leaders from within. It's a mindset that then gets reinforced. But as we look at then, you know, there was one example that I had. I was on retainer for 5 days a month for 3 years. And doing a lot of coaching and a lot of leadership work and a lot of sales development and business development work. But it was almost like I was the one having to pull the organization along, and that's why the owner had me in there, to pull the organization along. And so at some point in time, you know, leadership has to start at the top and be driven down. And as we look at then, building that coaching mindset and the feedback that we begin to talk about in the beginning. But it's really the difference between understanding the difference between managing and coaching and what those and what that looks like. And so the example that I have is that, you know, a manager pushes people in that they help people solve problems for them. A coach pulls people and helps people solve problems on their own. A coach uses words like listening and understanding, reflecting, asking questions, making suggestions, giving feedback, offering guidance. A manager is more inclined to tell and instruct and give an advice and tell and direct people what to do. And so it's then the shift in that is critical in how I go about developing my managers to be more effective as coaching. And one of the great books that's out there from a philosophical coach is a coach written by a book written by Don Shula and Ken Blanchard called Everyone's a Coach, because it talks about philosophically the approach to coaching and the mindset to coaching that a manager must have.
So absolutely, great point. I think another book that I know is that I've used quite a bit in my work is the book by the Gallup people in terms of finding your strengths and being able to identify that. And one of the pieces that they emphasize in their research is that one of the things that differentiates good managers from average managers is that ability to identify the strengths of their people and to leverage those strengths in the job. So a good manager needs to have some of those skills that you're talking about in a coaching culture. In other words, they need to be able to listen, observe, identify what is it this person really does well and what is it that they don't do so well. So I don't start putting people in positions where they're not leveraging their strongest areas and finding ways of and instead putting a team together where everybody leverages their strength to increase productivity. So in a way, good coaching, the skills that relate to good coaching are very essential to the skills of good management. So, you know, to the degree that that gets neglected in your management culture, you're actually hurting your capacity to leverage your talent fully. And I think in a culture, in a society now where talent becomes the differentiator of a lot of our competitive advantage and organizational success, we need to have our managers be able to identify and develop talent in the way that we're talking here.
So, but here's the big challenge, though, and that is that to really be an effective coach and to be able to coach at all levels across the spectrum, whether you're coaching the manager who manages others or whether you're coaching that functional business unit manager or even that international manager, you've got to have the experience to provide the feedback and understand those things that evolve. Well, so there's a couple things that go into that then. If I'm going to be a good coach, I really have to understand behavior, and I have to understand motivation and how people are wired, and I have to understand people's different power bases, and I have to understand all the different competencies and how to coach to the competency and how to explain what the competency looks like. And if I can't do that, guess what happens to my coaching ability?
Exactly. And not only that, you're also speaking to your credibility. You need to, as a coach, know the business well enough to really be credible for the person who's getting the coaching, that they understand their world, you understand their world, their issues, their struggles, and that you can speak to. And I've had experience guiding people through those kind of passages that we're talking about in the leadership pipeline. So that credibility factor, that chemistry factor, that a sense that this coach is going to be your ally, but also someone who can really guide you and direct you into territory that you're not familiar with, and they've done it, they've got a track record, I think that's a big factor in why a lot of times people will bring in organizations such as ours to really help jumpstart this process of creating a coaching culture.
Well, and it makes it more difficult to coach a manager who's working at an international level if you've never worked at an international level.
Exactly.
And of course, the argument is, well, good coaches can coach across any spectrum, and there's truth in that. But understanding some of the challenges that leaders face, back to my example of the one where the HR manager was given the charter by the president of this division to coach this one executive, and it just has never gone anywhere because there's no respect there, and there's no feeling that individual, that HR manager, is going to be able to help her in any shape or form, just actually goes nowhere. But when you look at, then, back to what I was referring to, and that is, if I don't understand enough about behavior and motivation and where people's power bases are, and I don't understand the competencies myself, then it makes it much more difficult to coach to the competency if I don't understand it. So the challenge then becomes is that as an organization looks for the coaches, and I use that as a plural, I don't think one coach fits all. There's some dynamics behind that, but there's certain situations, which is why Gordon and I make a great team, because there's certain situations that Gordon has background in that I don't, and vice versa. Or there may be other situations that we come across where we have two other individuals that are part of our team that get involved in coaching, Dr. Phil Delatorre and Dr. Dave Watterson. So we have other people available besides coaching just Gordon and I, but the preponderance of that work Gordon and I do. But back to the coaching culture piece, not to get off that, and that is that it must be driven from the top down, and then training must be provided to the frontline managers on understanding the principles and guidelines behind coaching, with classes and courses taught around motivation and behavior and competencies and speaking to different competencies and building the competency model, and then knowing what goes into the competency model so people can start to learn how to model it.
Well, and I'm imagining, Rick, as our listeners are listening to this, that there's the challenge of thinking, okay, where are we now? We've got a business to run. We're really strapped. We're running lean right now. It's a tough economic time. Can I really afford to take this time to build a more of a learning culture and a coaching culture? I've just got a job to do. And we hear this a lot, that people don't feel that it's extra time that needs to be invested, and it is in fact time and often a financial commitment in terms of their investment of their people. What do you tell an organization that's saying, hey, we just don't have the time for this. We've got to get a job done, and we really can't talk about all this energy on developing and coaching people. We just don't have the luxury of that kind of process at this point.
I think the real approach is that much like developing a leadership program or developing a strong marketing program or developing a strong sales program is no different than developing a strong coaching program. And if you're looking to create gains in morale and reduce employee turnover and communication and opening lines of communication, I think that a strong coaching program is going to help an organization provide that. But I think an organization has to look at that in terms of an ongoing process. And that it evolves. And it might evolve, it might take 2 years to get it in place. And you might start with certain elements and certain components. But it's an evolution of training, reinforcement, backup, accountability that goes into that. So I think if you look at saying, we want to start a coaching program, yeah, you could spend thousands of dollars, putting it together tomorrow. But it won't happen tomorrow. It's an evolution of people in the learning process that I think happens over time.
Good point. It's something I'd like to come back to a little bit in our last segment, but it sounds like we're about at a break time here, right?
Yep. So we're getting ready to take a break. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, with my guest and colleague, Dr. Gordon Medlock. If you've got any questions, call us at 866-472-5790. We'd be glad to take your questions. Otherwise, we'll catch you right after the break.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. G? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters with Dr. G airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Last 2 minutes.
Good.
Hey, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. I was didn't catch the break there. But anyway, we're talking about building a corporate culture and the significance behind that. And last week we talked about a coaching process and what goes into moving an executive along and the steps necessary to build an effective coaching platform. We're talking about a coaching culture today, and we've been talking about the organization's responsibility, but I want to talk just for a minute about the individual's responsibility as we kind of wrap up this segment. But the piece is that without a strong coaching culture and a strong coaching process, we wind up losing good people because we don't invest in them. And people want to feel as though they're invested in, and it's pretty consistent that when people feel they've been invested in, they feel like the ownership of the organization cares about them, and I think you build a better loyalty to that, don't you, Gordon?
I think that's an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up. Absolutely. That there's just a lot of research that one of the things that people relate to in terms of their retention on the job, how you keep good people, is, you know, does my boss care about me? Are there interesting opportunities for me to develop within the organization? It's not about dollars, much to many people's surprise. The salary factor is important in the sense that if it's not perceived as fair or lower than market value, it will be a disincentive for people to engage and perform. But at a certain level, if the salary structure is fair and people feel good about that, more salary isn't going to be the thing that's going to create motivation and engagement and retention. It's actually these other factors of, are there opportunities for me to feel meaningful, you know, meaningful work is being done? Are my relationships at the job going to be things that are satisfying? Do I have an opportunity to develop and grow in this position? Those are the things that are about retention of talent, development of talent. And to your point, the loss of key people is probably one of the biggest costs that an organization has to incur. We all know if we lose a key person, what it takes to hire someone else, the cost of finding that person, getting them up to speed, the hit that the business takes in terms of lack of momentum, it's huge. So, not only is this an important cultural factor, but it also just makes good business sense to make sure that you're investing in your people in this way.
Well, I've got one client right now, and this is an active assignment, where there were four internal candidates that were being looked at in this position. One of them did get promoted. And isn't it interesting that the organization not only provided coaching services, and I'm the one that's doing the coaching. I'm coaching the manager who's just been promoted, but I'm also doing coaching for the next 3 months on the three people who didn't get promoted to help them close their gaps. Isn't that interesting?
Excellent. That shows an investment on the part of the organization, and then suddenly coaching becomes more of a value that people see as part of the culture, as opposed to just something that you get either when you're in trouble,
right,
or maybe a special perk if you're designated as a person for development purposes.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of message that when leadership sends that message out, you know it's becoming part of the culture in a very positive way.
Right. So as we look then, you know, and kind of wrapping up this show on culture, and that is, we've been talking about the organization's role and responsibility, but what about the individual's role and responsibility? I don't think there's enough emphasis put on accountability. I think there's too much, for example, a couple of our major clients have, where I do some executive coaching and there's some leadership coaching, or we've done some for example, one of our clients we work with and we do the high potentials in that organization, it's pretty much been left up to them. We've made some changes as of late, but it's pretty much left up to them that once they receive the feedback from me, that they can decide what they want to do with it from there. And if they choose to want to go further, they can, but it's not mandated by any means. So are we throwing that money away? And in a sense, I feel we are, if the organization doesn't hold them accountable. So I think there's an individual responsibility. I think one of those is that we need to make sure that individual makes a commitment and has a desire to make changes. I think that they need to recognize and agree to that the gaps that they have and how they impact the organization. I think that we need to help them, and they need to recognize the learning pathways and the involvement that they need to make, and then their own implementation of their own action plan and their own follow-up. But management needs to come in behind that and make sure that's getting done and hold them accountable.
Right. You're bringing up a really important issue here, Rick. I think it's the balance between personal responsibility, that you want your managers to be responsible for their own growth and development. At the same time, this is a relationship process, that my relationship with my manager is part of what we're talking about, that if it's not important to my manager that I'm developing, or if we haven't sat down to talk about what's the vision of my development in the organization so we're aligned around where I'm going, that's going to be a big motivator for me to take more responsibility and for me to feel more connected to my manager in that process. So it's about relationship, it's about personal responsibility, and it's about a vision of where I'm going in the organization. If you put those pieces in place, you've got an effective coaching culture.
So what happens then if I'm being asked to take upon a coach and I'm being asked to improve my development and I'm being held accountable for my development, but I don't see my manager doing that?
Well, shame on them, right? I mean, that's exactly the point. It's not just what we say, it's what we do that really matters. It's the, as one of the experts in this field says, it's the theory in use, not the espoused theory. So if we talk coaching, but we're not living it, then, you know, there's a gap that the employees are going to pick that up. That kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. If the senior level management and the CEO is saying, this is something I want everybody to do, but by the way, I'm not particularly interested, that gap is what gets communicated, and the lack of investment and motivation just shows up throughout the entire organization.
Well, so we talked at the top of the show, you'd asked me about feedback, and that is that sometimes it's uncomfortable giving the feedback necessary, which in some cases is why people like Gordon and I are brought in, is that we tend to do the heavy lifting, unfortunately.
Right.
But giving that feedback is a critical piece, and unless the feedback is as hard-hitting as it needs to be, based on an individual who doesn't see it and doesn't have the level of awareness, that makes the coaching situation that much more troublesome in the process.
Well, you're bringing up, I think, something we talked about in the earlier show, which is the culture of athletics and the culture of business. You know, in the culture of athletics, having a good coach is a given. You do your video of the, how you played in the last game. You look at where you missed blocks or where you weren't running correctly or where you were blindsided and weren't paying attention. It's like without that feedback, you don't know where to go. You don't know how to develop. So just like we see it in sports, we're going to see it, and we do see it quite a bit more now in business, that people need that feedback and they need to be able to hear exactly what's not working in order to be able to correct. And it's just good business to do that.
Well, the feedback is so critical. I mean, one of the examples that the CEO called me and said, you know, one of our regional managers, always has great numbers, but he is just impossible to deal with both internally and externally, and customers calling and complaining, yet he doesn't see it.
Mm.
The problem is no one complained to him. So in his mind, he's doing a great job, right? So
yeah, there you go.
I interviewed 9 customers and 9 internal people, peers, support, or, you know, no, but peers and people in the organization, and got scathing remarks back about this guy's demeanor and interpersonal skills. And when I wrote the report and provided the write-up, you know, the guy, he didn't respond to me for 2 weeks. I called him back and said, have you read your report? He said, yeah, I read it. And I said, well, what do you think? He said, I don't like it. And I said, well, why not? He said, because it's all true. I said, well, what are we going to do about it? So, you know, unless you really provide that hard-hitting feedback, you're not going to get people to change. So it starts with a culture. It starts with understanding the organization's responsibility, the accountability piece, the feedback piece, and all the things that Gordon and I talked about last week in terms of what goes into an effective coaching process. So I want to thank Gordon again for coming back on the show with me. We're available to work with organizations in developing their coaching culture. But you've been listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. And What's Leadership Got to Do with It is the book that's coming out. It's also the name of the book. Should be ready for release here in the next month or so as we wrap up the show and the book. But it was founded on the principles of 20 years of consulting work, and prior to that, 20 years of being in business. And you can find out more about that on our website at www.theeg.com, theeg.com, The Executive Group. But it was, the book was founded on the what I call the fundamental five, and that is that I think it's leadership's responsibility, and there's not a chapter on leadership in the book, but the fundamental five speaks to understanding what leaders have to look at, and that is leaders must pay attention to their corporate culture and what that corporate culture looks like. Leaders must pay attention to the individual contributors and how to develop them and promote them and build morale. Chapter three is about group dynamics and how groups need to work together cross-functionally. Chapter four is about the business world and business dynamics, and chapter five is about your organizational structure. And the last 14, this is show number 14, the 14 shows that we've done have all built and gone into more depth in terms of what comes out of the book and its principles and its practices. And next week's show we're going to wrap up with kind of the old adage of, you know, how do we finish? And so we're going to talk about finishing next week in terms of bringing closure, and it will be our last show. So I want to thank Gordon again. I want to thank our listeners for listening in. You've been listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Gordon.
Thank you again for tuning in to What's Leadership Got to Do with It? Please join your host, Rick Thiemann, again next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.